You're gonna be popular. I'll teach you the proper poise when you talk to boys. Little ways to flirt your glance. I'll show you what shoes to wear.
Mitch Prinstein admits he was not popular in high school, but he did spend his youth observing behaviors that has led to his career, where he is board certified in clinical child and adolescent psychology and serves as the John Van Cedars Distinguished Professor of Psychology and Neuroscience at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And he joins us today on the phone. Mitch, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Do you usually have that song introduce you?
Sometimes. I've heard it a few times.
I bet you have.
Good song.
So the title of your book that we're going to talk about today is Popular, The Power of Likeability in a Status-Obsessed World. And so let's start by how you started looking at this topic of being popular.
Yeah, I was interested in popularity even when I was a kid, but when I started graduate school and studying it, I was pretty surprised. I thought that popularity would be important for kids. I had no idea that it would have the effect on our lives that it does for decades after we leave school.
It really shapes who we become?
It changes our health. It changes our relationships. It changes our work performance. And at some level, and I think we all kind of experience this every now and again, you know, we kind of still feel 16 inside. You know, there's a moment where we might think, oh, this reminds me of something in high school. And it turns out that we can even see now in the way that our brains work how much popularity from adolescence is changing our experiences today.
So let's talk just a little bit about defining popularity. Two different types of popularity?
Yeah, that's right. There's one type, which is really based on our likability. And that's a kind of popularity that we can recognize even when we're as young as 3 and 4 years old. Likeability is, it's good. It's important. It serves us well throughout our lifetimes. It's based on how much we are enjoyed by other people. We make them feel good. They want to spend time with us. We care about them. We are looking to make them feel happy. And there's also status. Status is kind of that high school version of popularity that we just heard Kristen Chenoweth singing about, you know, being kind of cool and visible and powerful and influential. And it turns out that's not so good. Those who have the highest status do pretty poorly over time.
And so which is the type of popularity that changes us? Is it the status or is it the likability? The one that sticks with us, that rewires our brains.
Yeah, it's both, really. Our experiences kind of all meld together in adolescence. And we used to be in a world where we would revert back to caring more about likability as we became adults. But things have changed. So right now, they both affect us because we live in a world of perpetual adolescence now where even way after we leave high school, we're still focused on status a lot more than society used to be, even just 10 or 20 years ago.
Give me some examples of what that looks like in adulthood.
Well, rather than working as part of a team and caring about the greater good, there's a lot more focus now on how much we want to be seen as better than others. We want to rise to the top and get credit and visibility. I think we see it in the workplace. I think we see it in our personal relationships. We certainly see it on TV and social media right now. There's a tremendous amount of time and energy that people spend just to get that feeling that our brain gives us whenever we get that jolt of visibility and feeling like we influence others. That's status, and that's something that is very new. The culture that we used to be valued community and connections and caring a lot more. Ironically, now we feel more isolated and disconnected from others than ever before.
How does social media play into this?
Well, some people say that social media created this focus on status, and others say that it might reflect something that started, you know, a while before then. There's so much to say about social media, but I think one of the things that's really important is the effect that this is having on our kids. It's remarkable how much kids feel like their value as a person is now something that can be measured by their Snapchat and Instagram followers. There are teen magazines that are explaining to kids step-by-step instructions to become social media famous. There are cosmetics companies marketing makeup to look good in your selfies. this is a really dangerous message for kids if they believe that gaining status is something really important, because status actually leads to bad outcomes.
What kind of bad outcomes?
Well, those who have the highest status in high school grow up to have relationship difficulties, addictions, anxiety, and depression. They're at greater risk for all of those things. Adults who have high status report that they feel remarkably lonely and disconnected. CEOs have the highest rates of depression. Celebrities are continually talking about, including in the book where there's the opportunity to talk about some interviews with celebrities, who report that they feel like they have a lot of status, but no one really knows who they are, so they feel very alone, and that they're not really valued for who they really are as a person.
So who makes a better CEO, the most popular kid in high school or the most liked kid in high school?
Absolutely the most liked. They are going to create a team who is going to be really focused on, the team will be focused on doing what's best for the team. And everyone will be interested in the best ideas. The very popular, high-status person, when they become a leader, they're probably fostering, research says, an environment that really promotes everyone maintaining their own status and trying to maintain their own visibility. And that doesn't mean doing what's best for the team. That means doing what's best for yourself.
How do we teach that then to our children?
Well, you know, today maybe more than ever, it's really important that parents understand the difference between status and likability and know how to teach their kids which one is most important. And when teaching kids how to be more likable, or in particular, how to avoid the problems of dislikability, there are actually a lot of steps. I talk about some of them in the book. To really help kids develop social competence that will serve them well, not just in grade school, but for the rest of their lives.
Is there too much pressure from parents so their kids may not have the same experience that they had in high school?
Well, there's a lot of pressure, but I get it. You know, we would never want our kids, we never want to send them to school to face an entire day of tormenting and ostracism. I mean, that's just awful to think about our kids experiencing that and that helplessness feeling that what can you do about it? You can't go in school and force the other kids to like your child. So I think it's important that parents don't assume that this is just kids being kids and that they have no role in how their children are doing with peers. I think it's really important for parents to focus on this. There are plenty of other things to focus on, but I understand. But it turns out that how likable they grow up to be will affect their lifespan as much as their happiness.
Now, I'm wondering about how anti-bullying campaigns in the schools, and how can that change the course of history now that there's more attention on that? I mean, because there's been this hierarchy, high school hierarchy, I'll call it, in our world, and as that changes and as we perhaps change how we are in high school, maybe, is that what kind of long-term impact is that going to have on society?
Well, I wish that we could stop bullying. Certainly, you know, kids are very clever, and what doesn't happen on the school grounds now is happening in secret ways or online. And as you say, there will always be that high school hierarchy. There are ways of helping kids who are victimized, though. One of the things that I talk about is the ways that parents can help their kids understand why bullies bully others, and let kids know that it's often not because of anything that the child did or anything about them that's consistent and stable. It's something more about the bullies. The bullies actually usually come from backgrounds where they've witnessed a lot of aggression going on. And that perspective, it turns out, can really shield kids who are victims from suffering the psychological consequences. So parents can play a really big role in, if not stopping all kinds of bullying, helping kids who are victimized understand in a way that will make them not suffer emotionally.
My mom always said to me, kill them with kindness. It's nice to know from your book, my mom was right, right?
She was right. It really does pay off. It's remarkable how much we assume and believe good things about likable people and give them some chances. It's for that reason that likable people aren't just perceived to have some advantages, but research shows they actually do have advantages. Because every time you act in a nice way and you're likable and you're given one of those opportunities, you get a new teaching opportunity. You learn something new that the people who are not invited to come along did not get to learn. And when that's repeated every hour of every day of every week as you're growing up, likable people really do grow up to have a different skill set than dislikable people do.
What prompted this type of research? Give me a little history of the research into these kinds of behaviors.
You know, it was pretty much a surprise to everyone. It was back in the 60s and the 70s, I believe, when the field of psychology was so invested in understanding, you know, the kids' mothers and how your relationship with your mom affects you for the rest of your life. And certainly, you know, much of that is true. But there was a study done back around the military to try and understand how to help folks succeed when they were in battle. And what they found was that one of the predictors that played one of the biggest roles in who succeeded and who did not, it wasn't their relationship with their moms. It wasn't their IQs. It wasn't their histories of behavioral difficulties. It was their popularity back in school. Their grade school popularity affected them so many years later. And as more research was done, it was found that that wasn't just for people in the military. That was happening in really significant ways for everyone. And a whole area of research in psychology was kind of born to really understand the remarkably powerful effects of popularity.
So the popular high school kid, maybe not so nice, what type of soldier was that kid?
Well, it was actually the likable soldier that did particularly well. The popular kid in high school, the one with the high status, you know, I don't know whether that had been looked at back then, but we now know that to be very, very different than the kid who is very likable. In fact, most of the high status kids are quite hated. But the likable kid, they did particularly well because they had an ability to read the group, to read their setting in really clever ways and lead from within, to not force and dominate others, but to really understand how to move a group by making everyone feel like they were together and synchronized and all the values of everyone within it were being met. That's something very clever that likable people can do so well.
Sometimes, though, the most popular kid in high school is well-liked, is a kind person. That person will succeed?
30%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. About 30% of those who have the highest status in high school are also the most likable, and they do quite well, of course. They kind of have a variety of different kinds of benefits. The majority of those who have the highest status, though, are not necessarily also the most likable.
Hmm. What makes them unlikable? Is it because they're bullied? Bullies?
Yeah, well, being aggressive is a great way to gain more status, if that's what you want, but it is absolutely the worst way to become more likable. In fact, it's one of the strongest predictors of dislikability that there is.
So when somebody likes our post on Facebook or likes it on Twitter or whatever, are we now judging ourselves by the number of likes we get on social media?
Well, it's very addictive, and for good reason. The part of our brains that is activated when we see that our posts got a lot of hits is the same part of our brains that gives us the kind of pleasure we do become addicted to, even the kind of pleasure that we get among people who use recreational drugs. I think the concern is people can get addicted to that and can chase it thinking that it will make them happy, but that's not true. It gives you that fleeting moment of pleasure, but it's not something that makes you happy in the long term. If you use social media to truly connect with people, to be interested in the person behind that mouse click, to really share and form a relationship, then social media could be a great way to develop likability and to become happier. But unfortunately, there might be a lot of people searching after likes, and they're going to find that they don't like the result very much at all.
And for parents, our job for social media for kids is to teach them kindness.
Yeah, and teach them to have relationships, whether they're online or offline, where they're able to make real emotional social connections with people and not just pursue the adoration of anonymous folks who are clicking them from who knows where, you know, and making them feel that temporary jolt of status.
Mitch Prinstein, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on the program today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.